Whether you're shopping for grads, getting an early gift for dad, or just looking for a little something new or used for your shelf, you'll find it at HPB. And you'll get almost everything for an extra 20% off during the big sale at Half Price Books this Memorial Day weekend. Saturday, May 25th through Monday, May 27th, save big in-store at your local Half Price Books and at HPB.com. Offer cannot be combined with other coupons. Exclusions apply. To learn more, visit HPB.com.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
From WNYC Studios, I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast. It's Friday, January 19th. Among the many court proceedings Donald Trump is facing, the one that's been taking place in New York this week stands out for several reasons. It's round two of the defamation suit brought by the writer E. Jean Carroll, in which Trump has already been found by a jury to have sexually assaulted Carroll in a Bergdorf Goodman dressing room in Manhattan in the 1990s.
You know, I'm automatically attracted to beautiful. I just start kissing them. It's like a magnet. You just kiss. I don't even wait. And when you're a star, they let you do it. You can do anything.
Yeah, that was Trump in the infamous Access Hollywood tape made public just before the 2016 election. The jury found that in this case, Carroll didn't let him do it, kissing and more, but he did it anyway. Many women have said the case feels so personal to them because of things they and people they know have gone through. But apparently Trump thinks it will help him, not hurt him politically, because he showed up in the courtroom this week to make disparaging remarks about Carroll and the judge right in front of the jury that will sit in judgment of him. And the case apparently didn't move Nikki Haley enough to even acknowledge the sexual assault verdict when she was asked point blank about it by a voter in a New Hampshire town hall last weekend.
I mean, first of all, I haven't paid attention to his cases, and I'm not a lawyer. All I know is that he's innocent until proven guilty, and when he's proven guilty and he's sitting in a courtroom, that's exactly what I'm talking about. You've got investigations on Trump and Biden.
Interesting way to try to beat Trump in New Hampshire, say you didn't even know he was actually found by a jury to have committed sexual assault. The case this week is very Trump 24, too, after the first jury found that the assault happened and he defamed Carroll by maliciously lying about her. He just kept repeating the same things about her, including on television, so she sued him for defamation again, and they are back in court. Andrea Bernstein has been in the courtroom covering this for NPR, and she joins us now. Many of you know Andrea Bernstein from her Trump Inc. podcast that she did for WNYC, the Will Be Wild podcast series about January 6th. Her book, American Oligarchs, The Kushners, The Trumps, and the Marriage of Money and Power, and more. So, Andrea, hello. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hey, Brian. Great to be on with you.
Can you remind everybody of the basics of this case? Would it be right to say that the Me Too movement of, say, 2017, 2018, which was partly touched off by the Access Hollywood tape the year before, prompted Carroll to go public with this allegation of Trump assaulting her from the 90s?
I mean, it's hard to say exactly. That was certainly in the cultural zeitgeist at the moment. She had been working on a book called What Do We Need Men For? And had gone on a cross-country road trip to talk to women. And in the course of this, says that she sort of came to a personal reckoning that she was talking to all these women and they were telling her their stories. She felt under an obligation, she said, to tell her own story. So she put her account of what happened to her in the Bergdorf Goodman's department store in the 1990s. In her book, an excerpt appeared in New York Magazine, and within hours of that, Trump started defaming her. He called her a liar. He said, I didn't know her. He said she was doing this just to sell books, just to get publicity, just to get attention. He sort of threatened her, saying she should be very, very careful. She was treading into potentially dangerous testimony. And he has not backed off that position even until this week, where he sort of repeated that same defamation. Now, I'm calling this defamation, even though he is on trial for defamation, because, so for complicated legal reasons, there was a second lawsuit she filed. She sued Trump for this act of defamation while he was president. And because he was president, he had his Justice Department argue that it should defend him. It went to the Second Circuit Court of Appeals, which covers New York. They threw it to the District of Columbia Court of Appeals, which covers Washington. That's the case that's on trial this week. She filed a second case under a New York law which allowed adult survivors of sexual abuse to sue for civil damages for a year, beginning in Thanksgiving of 2022. That is the case that went to trial last spring, in which a jury found that Trump had sexually assaulted and or was liable for sexual assault and had defamed E. Jean Carroll. So that's the case that already happened. So yep. The judge in this case has said, we know there was sexual assault. He actually, even in the legal paper earlier this month, called it rape. And he said, we know there is defamation. The issue is, what are the damages going to be? So that is what's at issue in this trial, which was for an earlier incident of defamation, but is coming to trial later.
Right. Okay. So that's the timeline of two different cases and what law enabled him to go forward at what different times. So I get that that's a little wonky, but we don't even have to necessarily focus on that timeline to understand what's at stake here and what Trump has already been found liable for. Why did the judge, by the way, to cite something you just referred to, say that Trump had been found to have raped E. Jean Carroll? I thought at the time of the original finding, the jury found sexual assault, yes, but not rape. Is that wrong?
So that is correct. That caught my attention too. And I made some inquiries. I did some reporting on it. And what I heard from a number of legal experts is that because of what happened, which is that there was testimony that, and, you know, it's pretty graphic, we're talking about the former president here, but that there was this lighthearted conversation. He said, hey, you're the advice person. Hey, she said, hey, you're the real estate developer. They had sort of known each other from the New York celebrity world, if you will. And he said, I'm buying a gift. Help me buy a present. They end up in the lingerie department. And they have this joke about there's a piece of lingerie, and he says, you should try it on. And she says, you should try it on. And then Trump, according to the testimony, steers her over to the dressing room, takes her inside, pushes her against the wall, shoves his hand inside her, and then shoves his penis inside her. That was the testimony. And the judge has the latitude to describe that as rape. So that's what he said. So he was trying to send a message to the plaintiffs to say, or to the defendant, saying, don't try to deny this. It's been established. You're not, that is off limits for this trial, that we are not relitigating that. We are looking at the question of damages.
So one of the things you described from this week's case is the jury selection process, where prospective jurors were being questioned, as is routine, but Trump himself was sitting there scrutinizing these jurors. Can you describe some of what that was like, especially for the prospective jurors involved?
So we obviously have not been in communication with the jurors. So I can only say what it looked like it was like for them. I mean, I just to sort of back up a moment, Donald Trump is not required to be in the courtroom. This is a civil suit. He is under no obligation to be there. He did not attend the first trial. And I had thought, you know, unlike the business fraud trial, which I've also been covering, this is easy to understand what happened. And I had thought, you know, why would he want to associate himself with these, you know, I mean, it's been established that he, by the preponderance of the evidence, that he assaulted her. So why would he want to go sort of put himself in a room with her? But that is what he did. And he showed up during jury selection. And the jury selection, you know, some of it was the normal questions that juries get asked, which, you know, probably many listeners have been on jury duty. You know, do you know the defendant? Do you know any of the lawyers? Do you know the plaintiff? Can you be fair? This jury was also asked, where do you get your news media? Do you believe that the 2020 election was stolen? Three, I believe, jurors said yes to that question. They were asked, do you believe that Donald Trump is being mistreated by the legal system? A couple raised their hand. He sort of put up his hand, too, when that was said. But he would sort of, there were like, there were jurors in the jury box, and then there were jurors in some of the benches behind the defense table, and he would swivel around and really, really, really look hard and intently as the juror at the jurors as they were answering their questions.
Yeah. And I ask because you say Trump isn't required to be there, but a defendant certainly has the right to observe jury selection, and that applies to Trump like anyone else. But I'm thinking about how judges and their staffs and E. Jean Carroll herself, as you described, and others have become targets of these public insults, even death threats, when they say anything critical of Trump or hold him accountable for things. Do you think that Trump was looking at these potential jurors, some of whom are now actual jurors, in ways intended to intimidate them when they got seated?
I mean, it's hard to know exactly. The judge advised the jury to remain anonymous. And one of the things he said that was so striking is, don't even tell your fellow jurors your real name.
Wow.
Consider using another name so that you cannot be tracked down. So certainly that is something that is in the milieu of all of these trials.
And similarly, once the trial began, Trump was there and making comments from the defendant's chair during other people's testimony. I think that's the part that's probably gotten the most press this week, but I'm going to ask you to describe it because that by itself is pretty extraordinary. So can you give us some examples of that?
Right. So E. Jean Carroll started to testify on Wednesday, and she is giving her account. And there's a break, the jury goes out of the room, and her lawyers stand up and they say, Your Honor, to Judge Lewis Kaplan, we can hear the defendant saying it's a witch hunt, it's a con job. We think if we can hear this, the jury can hear it. Please admonish him to stop. So that happens. And then there is a second instance just before lunch where the lawyers for E. Jean Carroll say again, we're hearing these remarks, and the judge turns to Trump's main lawyer, Alina Haba, and says, I don't want to have to consider excusing your client, but I will. And then he turns to Mr. Trump, and he says, and this is a bit of a paraphrase, but he says to Mr. Trump, you would like it if I had to excuse you. And Trump says, I would. And the judge says, you can't control yourself. And Trump says to him, neither can you. So that is how things ended before lunch. In the afternoon, even after that, there was a point at which, some listeners, and you may remember that there was a town hall meeting by CNN the day after the verdict of the previous trial, in which Trump continued to, he said, I swear on my children, and I never say that. Which is true. I have not heard him swear on his children very often. I don't know this woman, continues, she's a liar, she's a con job, etc. And I see Trump watching the video of himself saying this and nodding his head, and I can hear him say, that's true. And I'm maybe about, 10 feet away. The jury is 10 feet away in another direction. Likely they can also hear it. So he is saying these things right after court on Wednesday, right before he went to a rally in New Hampshire. He held a press availability where he repeated these charges, which Carroll's lawyers then paid in the courtroom yesterday. So, I mean, the judge has already told the jury.
So there may be a third round of defamation charges.
Well, all this can go to damages, and that's what's at issue in this trial.
I see, and which is the point of this particular case, right, is how much they should award E. Jean Carroll in damages for all these things that Trump has continued to do. But about his outbursts from the defendant's chair, what are the rules? Do you know what the rules are? Can a defendant do that while somebody else is testifying?
I mean, no, right? The rule is you have to do what the judge says. You're supposed to sit there in silence. So, you know, the defendant is supposed to speak through their attorneys. So, but now I've seen Trump, you know, sort of just disregard that twice. He did it previously and during the closing arguments of his business fraud trial, where he also just started to speak without the court's permission.
And Ethan in Cape Cod, you're on WNYC. Hi, Ethan.
Hey, Brian. Hey, Andrea. Thank you for this, for the show and for this segment. I just wanted to say he needs to be jailed. The fact that Judge Kaplan is not jailing him for contempt, as you say, it undermines the institution. It makes a mockery of the idea that everyone's equal before the law. He's violated decorum, and it hurts us all. And I think any attempt to game this out and say, oh, what would be the political ramifications of jailing him? We don't know what they would be. And that cannot be a consideration. He just needs to sit at least one night in jail. And thank you for taking my call.
Thank you very much. Yeah, that goes back to too big to jail. But what would happen to someone else? I know you're not a lawyer or a legal analyst, but, you know, you cover Trump every which way. But do you know what would happen to someone else who is doing the things that Trump is doing in this courtroom?
I mean, it's hard to know because Trump is sui generis, right? He's a category of one. I mean, available remedies include he can't come into the courtroom, financial sanctions. You know, there are certainly cases where people are severely disrupted and they have to spend a night in jail. I mean, I think that, you know, all of these judges are mindful that they don't want to make... They don't want to play into Trump's hands and make a mockery of their proceedings. I mean, you know, of course, I don't know what's in their head. I would just say that that's how I read their actions. But, you know, Judge Kaplan, I mean, Judge Engoron, even though, you know, Trump really attacked him, that was the judge in the state judge in the civil fraud trial, is the judge, was pretty lenient. He really gave Trump quite wide latitude. In the courtroom, outside of the courtroom, and that case had no jury. Judge Kaplan, Lewis Kaplan in the federal court, is pretty strict and severe. You know, while we've been, you know, sitting in the courtroom before the judge comes in, the court security officers have come in and said, you know, don't whisper, don't chew gum, don't, you know, violate any of the rules. Or bring your toothbrush, you know, Judge Kaplan will, you know, cause you to spend a night in jail. So it's unclear what, you know, could or would happen.
So can you do a little Nikki Haley political analysis here? You've been a national political reporter in the past, for people who don't know Andrea's past, traveling the country for WNYC in a presidential election year. I'm going to replay that Nikki Haley clip from the New Hampshire town hall last week, where she was asked to comment on Trump as someone, again, found by a jury to have committed sexual assault. And here's what she said.
I mean, first of all, I haven't paid attention to his cases, and I'm not a lawyer. All I know is that he's innocent until proven guilty. And when he's proven guilty and he's sitting in a courtroom, that's exactly what I'm talking about. You've got investigations on Trump and Biden.
Deflect, deflect, deflect. Maybe even feigning ignorance, or maybe she really hasn't followed the case. But here she is, the strongest challenger to Trump for the Republican nomination, and a woman in that context, no less, not wanting to go on record about her opponent's sexual assault finding by an actual jury, any more than she wanted to go on record saying slavery was the cause of the Civil War. Can you offer any political analysis of that?
So, I mean, I obviously have not been on the trail. I've been in the courtrooms. But I do think that there is this pattern in the Republican Party of not wanting to take on Trump. And you can draw a line from that to the sort of increasing strengths of his position. I mean, there are been a variety of reasons presented, from the political don't want to offend his supporters, because if you start doing well, you're going to need to get some of them to win the presidency, to, you know, something that we heard very troublingly in the aftermath of January 6th, that there were members of Congress that were afraid for their families, that they would be harmed if they criticized President Trump. I mean, you know, it's clear from what's been going on in the courtroom this week that when former President Trump directs his ire at you, people respond. That is without a doubt true. But it is part of the phenomenon that has allowed the denialism to grow. And, you know, she says guilty. This is not a criminal trial. So that frames the argument in a misleading way.
And I know you got to go in a minute, but next comes Trump's case for the defense. Will he take the stand himself, or just mutter from the sidelines, or present any witnesses?
So he has said that his defense will be him. His lawyers have not said, they're also going to put forward Carol Martin, who some people may know as a former Channel 4 anchorwoman in New York, who was an outcry, one of the people that Carol told at the time that it happened. There was evidence that came in the last trial about how Carol Martin had written some text messages sort of, saying something to the effect of, you know, E. Jean is, you know, going too far with this, something like that. So they have said that they will present her as well as the former president. And as to what he will say, I mean, the plaintiffs have said, look, what can he say where he doesn't, sort of repeat his initial defamation? And his lawyers have said he has a right to say the context of when he was in the White House and he was asked about this, what the questions were, how he responded. So that is what they say he is going to testify. Now having seen Trump in person in two trials, the judges say, control your client. The lawyers say, we will. And then Trump says whatever he wants. It's hard to imagine him not repeating his themes, that it's a fake, it's a con job, it's a hoax, the judge is out to get him, everybody's out to get him. We shall see. That testimony could come as early as Monday. Once Trump testifies, the case will probably rest soon after. There will be instructions, and then it will go to the jury.
We will see if he puts himself under oath. Andrea Bernstein, covering the E. Jean Carroll Donald Trump case for NPR. Andrea, thanks as always.
Thank you. Great to talk to you.
Brian Lehrer, a Daily Politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at wnyc.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.